Hi, and welcome to Reader's Digest. I'm your volunteer reader, Tigger, and I'm still reading out of the September issue. The first article from Drama in Real Life is entitled Between a Rock and a Hard Place. Pinned by a giant boulder, a hiker had two choices, panic or gut it out. He did both. This is by Nick Hewn Brown. The Inyo Mountains rose dusty and jagged into a perfect blue sky as Kevin DiPaolo and Josh Nelson set off across the desert range. That corner of Eastern California was DiPaolo's favorite part of the country, which was saying something because the 26-year-old had visited nearly every inch of the United States. Wiry and strong, with blonde shoulder-length hair and an earnest way of speaking, the New York-born DiPaolo had spent his time since college in search of adventure, impatient for life experiences. For the last few years, he'd been a nomad, living out of a tricked-out van he christened Vanessa, while doing odd jobs and remote data analyst work from the road. He'd been up to Alaska and down to Florida, and crisscrossed the states in between. But something about that part of California, where you could find both outdoor thrills and a little solitude amid the ancient mountains, had always seemed special to him. Part of the draw was the friends he'd made there, especially Josh Nelson. The two had met a few years earlier in a coffee shop in the town of Bishop. The men had bonded instantly. In DiPaolo, Nelson saw a kindred spirit, someone who wanted every ounce of adventure he could get. And in the 38-year-old Nelson, DiPaolo found an older brother figure, someone who taught him everything from rock climbing skills to where to find deposits of crystals out in the mountains. That morning last December, DiPaolo was back in Bishop. He'd found a perfect spot to go rock hounding, searching for crystals and minerals, and now he wanted to show Nelson his discovery. Nelson was feeling under the weather, just getting over a cold, so DiPaolo shouldered most of the load, shovels, pickaxes, as they walked through sandy gullies and scrambled over boulders. After about an hour and a half, they arrived at a rocky hillside spot. It was just as DiPaolo had said, a deposit of cool rocks, buried just in front of a pair of enormous boulders. For almost 2 hours, the friends happily dug in the sand side by side, pulling out rocks of all shapes and sizes. At around 3 p.m., Nelson stepped aside to rest and enjoy the perfect 65-degree temperature, while DiPaolo continued to kneel, working away with a small scraper in the large hole they had dug in the sand. The boulder closest to him was slightly uphill, but it had a look of permanence to it, as if it hadn't budged in millennia and wouldn't move any time soon. But here he was wrong. Whatever equilibrium the enormous stone had found over the years was slowly being shifted, grain of sand by grain of sand, as DiPaolo scraped away beneath it. DiPaolo sat up for a moment and turned away as he caught his breath. That's when he heard Nelson yell, "Look out, Kivo!" DiPaolo turned back, and in that instant the boulder lurched toward him and rolled, crashing into him like a semi-truck and crushing his legs into the sand. With DiPaolo now pinned to the ground up to his thighs, Nelson ran to grab the pickaxe and wedged it between the rock and the ground to keep it from rolling any further, as DiPaolo bellowed in agony. The pain was extraordinary. It seemed to short-circuit his brain, the world becoming strange and dreamlike while his body went into shock, adrenaline pumping through his veins. "Am I really gonna die like this?" he wondered. He turned to Nelson and saw on his friend's face a look of fear that made him lose whatever composure he had left. "You gotta get this thing off me, man," he yelled. "I'm trying," said Nelson. The boulder was massive, had to be between 6,000 and 10,000 pounds, and Nelson strained against it. He gave three enormous heaves, and on the final push, he was able to rock the boulder ever so slightly. It was enough that DiPaolo could feel his left leg, numb and limp, was almost free, only held in place by the material of his pants. He grabbed the scraper and began tearing through his pants before pulling his leg out from the boulder. With one leg free, he could angle his body out of the path of the boulder, in case it came tumbling any farther. But his right leg was completely, irrevocably trapped, and his left leg had been blown open, the skin torn from the back of his thigh to his groin, with exposed muscles and arteries gleaming nauseatingly in the sun. As a veteran climber, Nelson had been in a few emergency situations before, but he never experienced anything like this. He could see that his friend's exposed femoral artery was damaged and oozing blood. He was terrified that DiPaolo would bleed out. Nelson double-wrapped the leg with a t-shirt and his sweater and applied pressure. He then tried his cell phone. Miraculously, despite being in the middle of nowhere, he got a signal. He called 911 and told the dispatcher where they were. The dispatcher stayed on speakerphone with them, urging DiPaolo to stay calm. Nelson started digging beneath the boulder, hoping to shift it enough to free his friend. But DiPaolo felt the boulder shift above him, bearing down on his leg even harder. The dispatcher yelled at them not to dig any further. There was no escaping. The only thing to do was stay put and hope that a rescue team could reach them. DiPaolo kept asking his friend, "Am I going to die?" Nelson shook his head. "You're not going to die, man." He couldn't tell if he was convincing or not. He didn't fully know if he believed it himself. But he knew that staying calm was the only way his friend was going to make it out alive. Corporal Victor Lawson of the Inyo County Sheriff's Office was supposed to be enjoying a day off. But when you're the search and rescue coordinator in a part of the country where hikers and mountain climbers often get into trouble, days off are never guaranteed. Lawson, a longtime climber, leads a crew of highly skilled volunteers, many of them dirtbag climbers, who spend every possible waking moment in the mountains and who want to put their experience and abilities to good use. When he got the call from dispatch, he jumped on the computer to find DiPaolo's whereabouts using his mapping software. The two hikers were miles from the nearest road, too far for his team to carry DiPaolo. He would need to be hoisted out in a helicopter. The Inyo County Sheriff's Office doesn't have its own aircraft, but over the years has developed relationships with a number of nearby organizations that do. Lawson's first call was to Naval Air Weapons Station China Lake, but as bad luck would have it, they were repairing their helicopter that day. The next call was to the California Highway Patrol and its Inland Division Air Operations, but unusually, they weren't available either. Lawson put out a call for the rescue team to meet at the Posse Hut, the garage filled with gear where his team planned their missions. As he drove there, he racked his brain. It was now 3:15 p.m., but in the dead of winter, it wouldn't be light for long. Who was nearby who could bring a helicopter out into the mountains and had the capability to hoist a person out in the dark? Any kind of intense rescue mission would take hours, and Nelson and DiPaolo were miles off track in steep, rocky terrain that was difficult to reach. And the dispatcher on the phone had made it clear. DiPaolo needed help soon, or he would die. On the side of the mountain, the hours passed slowly. The boulder hadn't just crushed DiPaolo. It had knocked over almost all the water they'd been carrying. That left them with just about one cup of water, which the two men rationed carefully as the hours passed. DiPaolo was wavering between moments of calm and moments of absolute panic. The two men would sit in silence for minutes at a time, DiPaolo listening to the sound of the wind and trying to work himself into a zen-like state before the reality of the situation would force its way in and he'd scream out again. Occasionally, Nelson would walk a few steps away to confer with the dispatcher on the phone, but whenever he was out of sight, DiPaolo would yell for his friend to return. At one point, he asked for Nelson's hand. He squeezed it as hard as he could, then bit it, the crazed act of someone in desperate pain. At around 4:30 p.m., as the sun was setting, the pair heard the distant whir of a helicopter. It came closer, and soon they could see its light swooping over them. DiPaolo's heart leapt. "They're going to save me," he thought. The helicopter was from the Central Division of the California Highway Patrol, which had called Lawson, saying they were available. They flew a reconnaissance flight over the area, sighted the two men, then headed to the trailhead, where they would pick up some of the rescuers who were still driving toward the mountain. But the two men didn't know any of that when the aircraft circled and then flew off again, leaving them alone and once again in the silence. It felt to DiPaolo as though his chance to be rescued had disappeared over the hills. Night comes fast in that part of the country in December, and temperatures swing wildly in the desert. As the sun went down, temperatures plunged to near freezing. DiPaolo began to shiver, every spasm sending an excruciating current of pain through his body. Nelson gathered all the clothing he'd brought in his backpack, rain gear and sweaters, and piled them onto his friend. Then he collected wood and built a small fire, keeping it stoked while the two of them waited under the black, starless sky. DiPaolo focused on the glow of the fire, keeping his mind on that little patch of light amid the infinite darkness. At one point, DiPaolo asked Nelson to call his mom. If he was going to die, he wanted to speak to her one last time. Nelson refused. "You're not dying on my watch," he said. At about 8 p.m., 5 hours into their ordeal, DiPaolo looked up to the hills and saw, glowing in the distance, the beams of headlamps from the search and rescue team descending to meet them. The first pair of rescuers had come by foot, driving to the closest spot they could find and then hiking in. With their enormous packs and heavy tools, making their way over the steep terrain in the darkness was treacherous. Each hill they crested presented them with a new predicament. Try to navigate huge boulder fields or trudge through loose sand. Moments later, the next pair of rescuers, the ones who had rendezvoused with the helicopter, showed up. The pilot could only find a landing spot about a mile away from the site, so they arrived from the opposite direction, facing similar difficult hiking conditions. Finally, seeing his rescuers face to face allowed DiPaolo to relax, if just for a bit. The team took stock of the situation. An EMT took DiPaolo's vitals, attaching a pulse oximeter to his finger. Despite the incredible damage to his legs, he was stable. Nelson's rudimentary first aid had done its job. Meanwhile, the other rescuers were working with purpose. One of the men positioned a high lift jack, a tool used to lift off-road vehicles under the boulder. Others drilled into the rock, pounding a bolt into the stone with a rock hammer and attaching a carabiner, which they then attached to a rope and pulley system tethered to a large boulder slightly down the hill. In careful coordination with two other men holding DiPaolo under his armpits, the rescuers used the pulley and the jack to inch the rock off his leg. DiPaolo could feel the pressure lessening. He watched in wonder and terror as the boulder rose upward, thinking that one wrong move and he would be crushed. The rescuers tugged him by his armpits, trying to free him, but his ankle was still caught. "Is your foot free?" they asked. "No, no," yelled DiPaolo. Finally, on the third heave, after he'd been trapped for 5.5 hours, they managed to pull the leg from under the boulder. The rescuers transferred DiPaolo to a light stretcher called a litter and he lay there still in agony. He realized that he hadn't thought beyond the moment. He had imagined that once he was out from under the boulder, everything would be fine. But that was not the case. The rescuers patched him up and tried to keep him as comfortable as possible. Then they delivered more bad news. It was too dangerous to take him off the mountain in the dark. They were staying put for the night. You're listening to Reader's Digest on Sun Sounds of Arizona, a 24-hour reading and information service for people who can't read print due to a disability. If you miss any part of this program, you can always listen to it on demand and on our website. Go to Broadcast Info and Audio and click on Demand. And who says you can't take it with you? You can stream and get on demand on our app for Apple and Android phones. And incidentally, you can listen on your Echo Dot or smart home device as well. Back to our rescue. Back at the posse hut, Victor Lawson had not given up on getting DiPaolo off the mountain that night. The best bet was by helicopter, but the helicopter crew that had transported the rescuers didn't have the training for a nighttime rescue at a high altitude, nor did anyone else he contacted. But he put in a call to the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services, and they in turn had called the Naval Air Station Lemoore, about 100 miles away. The copter crew there was willing to try the dangerous maneuver. Just after midnight, DiPaolo once again heard the sound of helicopter blades whirring. The aircraft hovered above them, the force of its rotors spraying DiPaolo with small rocks and debris. Then, like something out of a movie, a Navy medic descended on a rope from the sky. "I'm going to strap you to me and we're going to go straight up in the air," he yelled over the roar. Just like that, the medic clipped DiPaolo's litter to his harness and the two men were rising. DiPaolo, lying on his back and swinging unsteadily as they rose 10, 20, 30, 40 feet in the air. Before he could freak out, rescuers aboard the helicopter hauled him in. And then he was off, the aircraft veering over the mountains toward the hospital in Fresno. There, doctors presented him with a good news, bad news scenario. First, the bad. He'd broken his pelvis in two places. He had a lot of dead tissue in his leg from where the boulder had struck him, and that tissue needed to be removed. And he had so badly damaged his femoral artery that it would need emergency surgery. The good news, they were hopeful he'd recover. After several hours of surgery, plus 9 follow-up procedures over the months to remove dead tissue, change the wound vacuum-assisted closure, and add skin grafts, and months of rehab, DiPaolo was healing and his doctors expected a complete recovery. With the road ahead looking brighter, he looked back upon that day not with anxiety, but incongruously with a profound gratitude. He thought about his friend Josh Nelson. They spoke on the phone just about every day in the aftermath of the accident. "I told him I love him, that I'm so thankful for him," says DiPaolo. He thought of the search and rescue team who were inspiring in their skill and toughness. He thought about the helicopter pilot, the doctors and nurses, all these people who had used their abilities and knowledge and care to save him when he couldn't save himself. It wasn't just that he was grateful to them. He wanted to emulate them. Throughout his early 20s, as he traveled the country in search of adventure, he'd also been searching for something else. "I've been looking for a kind of purpose all my life," he said. Now he knew he wanted to give back, like them. Maybe as a firefighter, an EMT? He wasn't sure exactly, but the path forward seemed clearer than it ever had. Before any of that, though, he needed to heal physically and spiritually. And to do that, he knew he needed to get back into nature. One day in late March, just 3 months after the accident that nearly killed him, DiPaolo found himself out in the California wilderness once again. The trail he'd chosen was at Millerton Lake near Fresno, where he'd been recovering and going to physical therapy. It was an easy 3-mile loop up Pincushion Mountain, not much more than a hill, really, by his old standards. As he walked, though, his heart pounded and his lungs ached. He could feel every individual muscle in both damaged legs straining. At one point, halfway through, he had sudden fear. Have I made a commitment my body can't actually handle? Then he took another step, then another. He would go slow, but he would keep going. Last week, I ran out of time to continue with our favorite drinks in different states, so I thought we'd get back to that. In New Jersey, it's green juice. With juice joints galore, popular brands include Arlie's Raw Blends, Greenpoint Juicery, and Purely Juiced. Jersey makes it easy to get your daily fruits and vegetables. Well, what else would you expect from the Garden State? In New Mexico, it's Agua Fresca, the colorful centuries-old tradition of steeping fresh fruit in water with sugar is both a street cart treat and a bright, beautiful way to beat the heat. In New York, egg cream. Nostalgia in a glass. This frothy, fizzy soda fountain concoction of milk, seltzer water, and you bet chocolate syrup contains neither egg nor cream. One theory is that its name comes from the Yiddish ekhkim, pure sweetness. Your inner child will want to chug it in a New York minute. In North Carolina, cheer wine. Affectionately nicknamed the Nectar of North Carolina, this cheerful cherry soda, nope, no wine in cheer wine, is the official soft drink of the National Barbecue and Grilling Association. The pairing works so well that it's become known as the Southern Handshake. Cheer wine in one hand, barbecue in the other. In North Dakota, chokecherry, the state fruit, grows wild in all parts of North Dakota, where generations of home canners have turned the astringent cherries into a sweet tart wine. Ohio was the first state to designate a state beverage in 1965, an ode to the concentration of tomato farmers in the northwestern part of the state. Meanwhile, another plant-powered drink, V8, is made with a secret recipe, including tomatoes, carrots, celery, beets, parsley, lettuce, watercress, and spinach by the Campbell Soup Company plant in Napoleon, Ohio. And we'll finish up with laughter, the best medicine. A customer in an Italian restaurant is so pleased with his meal that he insists on telling the chefs personally. The owner proudly leads him into the kitchen. Your pizza's superb, the customer tells the chef. I just spent a month in Italy, and yours is better than any I ever had over there. Naturally, the chef says, over there they use domestic cheese. Ours is imported. Where were bobbleheads created? In the land of Nod. Fun fact. If Celine Dion sang only the vowels in her name, it would be the lyrics to Old MacDonald Had a Farm. On a caving expedition, a man falls into a hole. His partner calls to him, "Are you hurt?" He yells back, "No." "How could you fall down that hole and not be hurt?" "Because I'm still falling." A man walks into a bar with a chicken pot pie on his head. The bartender asks, "Why are you wearing a chicken pot pie on your head?" The man replies, "It's an old family tradition. We always wear chicken pot pies on our heads on Tuesday." "Today's Wednesday." "Oh dear," says the man, "I must look like a real fool." The doorbell ringing at 2 a.m. wakes a couple from a sound sleep. The husband runs downstairs, throws open the door, and finds a guy standing in the pouring rain. "I need a push," the guy says. The husband slams the door and storms back to bed. "Who was that?" asks his wife. "Some guy wanting a push." "Honey, he's in trouble. Help the man." Feeling bad, the husband goes downstairs, opens the front door, and shouts, "Hey, pal, where are you?" The guy shouts back, "On the swing." This subject is a joke. We honor the college students heading back to class with these classless gags about their majors. Classics. My poor knowledge of Greek mythology has always been my Achilles elbow. History. No one should have been surprised by the rise of the USSR after World War II. There were red flags everywhere. Chemistry. I was reading a book on helium. I couldn't put it down. English. A cliche walks into a bar, fresh as a daisy, cute as a button, and sharp as a tack. Not wishing to see her, a synonym walks into a tavern. Religion. Too bad that Islam, Christianity, and Judaism have been fighting each other for centuries. Hindus, on the other hand, never had any beef. Applied mathematics. A statistician drowned crossing a river. Strange, since it was only 3 feet deep on average. Meteorology. Swedish astronomer Anders Celsius died in 1744 at age 42. His rival, Fahrenheit, insisted he was 108. Physics. Why didn't Isaac Newton dodge the apple? He didn't understand the gravity of the situation. Last and worst, Latin. A Roman walks into a bar, holds up two fingers, and says, 5 beers, please. Yeah. Okay, well, that's all the time that we have today for Reader's Digest. Thank you for listening. My name is Tigger. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.